Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 169, The Way of the Scottish Ninja, August 22nd, 2008. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
In order to test out my taijutsu, if you like, or my unarmed combat, I started working as a nightclub doorman, which did actually put it to the test very realistically on many occasions against various different weapons. But I used to get intuitive flashes even before I went to work, and intuitive flashes when I was at work. And I was able to really, tune into a lot more. I was able to identify who was carrying what, if somebody was carrying a knife. I was able to identify, you know, when trouble was going to happen. Who, you know, I was able to stop things happening before they actually happened. And I think a lot of very good security personnel do this, but they don't understand how they're doing it. And really all they're using is their intuitive feelings.
That was the voice of my guest, Jock Brokus. Jock Brokus is author of the book Powers of the Sixth Sense, How to Remain Safe in a Hostile World. In addition to being an author, Jock is also an expert in security and martial arts, as well as a professional psychic medium. Go to our show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com to learn more about Jock. Now, here's the interview. Jock Brokus, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you very much.
You're a security expert, a martial artist, and a psychic. What an unusual combination of experience, skills, and talents.
Yes, it is a bit of a mixed bag, if you like. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very unusual. I don't think there's anybody else in the world that can claim to have that many hats.
I know. When I got a copy of your book, you know, I went, well, what in the world is going on here? Now, which of these came first? Kind of take us through your evolution a bit, if you will.
Well, I've always been a spiritual kind of a guy. Ever since I was a young child. So I suppose, I mean, that was always kind of with me. And even through my young formative years, I kind of challenged what I was getting taught by the doctrines of the church. And then later on in life, the Catholic Church, you know, it was dead against kind of things that I would be speaking about or would understand. And so it was, you know, the gifts of psychic abilities or ESP or intuitiveness was kind of knocked out me. But however, from a very, very young age, from the age of about 10 years old, I started studying Bujinkan Ninjutsu. And I'd been interested in other martial arts and had went to other martial arts when I was even younger than that. And I suppose that it still had a kind of spiritual connotation there, in that it was a mind, body, and spirit thing. Of course, being too young, I would never really expect, you know, understand it or really experience the way it should be. And of course, anything that happened to me of a spiritual nature, to me, was very normal. And I thought everybody was the same way. And then, of course, later on in life, when I joined the military, I still had the experiences, but I never talked about it because it was not something in the military that you tend to talk about, because it's a very male-orientated, machismo type of environment when I was in, and therefore, you know, it's not something that you talk about. And in fact, you know, even when I was in the army, I kept on doing my training in various different arts, but never told anyone. And even to, you know, to later on in life, up until about 3 years ago, my mother only found out that I was actually a black belt in the art. So it had been a secret in my family for 20 odd years that I never actually spoke about it at all. It was something that was very personal to me. But But the psychic ability and the mediumship ability has always been there. And I'm very lucky to work hand in hand with my wife on that side of things as well. She's also a psychic, a medium, and an author. And we kind of travel the world doing what we do and helping people and, you know, and doing readings for people. So it's always been there. It's always been within me. But, you know, as I was when I was a younger person, I never really understood it so much. But I always understood the spiritual side of the martial arts, and I always understood that type of things, but could never join, you know, could never add two and two together and realize it was one and the same thing.
Yes, I know what you mean, because I studied sport judo when I was in high school. I started studying judo. And I remember I was very impressed by the ritualistic and aspects of it, you know, of bowing to the teacher and honoring the teacher and so on. And I think, you know, I think that may have in fact laid a little bit of an unconscious foundation for my later spirituality as well. So I definitely understand what you're saying there. By the way, we should mention that you're in Scotland. I don't know exactly where you're located.
Well, actually, if I mention to anyone who's listening, everybody's heard of Loch Ness. and I'm actually right at the very top of the mountains in Loch Ness. I have a house that's just right on top of the mountains, and I've got, you know, no neighbors. I just have trees and wildlife and a very mountainous region. So my wife and I are very happy up here. The energy's great. It's very spiritual as well, you know. It's clean, and it's beautiful.
Oh, it sounds delightful. I visited Scotland once briefly, and I'm eager to return. Now, I would kind of want to go through the different stages here. So I think you said part of your motivation for getting involved in the martial arts was that you were picked on as a kid. Do I have that right? How come they were picking on you? Were you small for your age or what?
No, I wasn't small. it sounds a bit of a cliche, really, but I wasn't a normal kid. I wasn't. I spent most of my holidays in most of my young years. My uncle was a monk in a monastery, and I spent most of my holidays in that monastery and learning, you know, about religion and you know, and it was a very spiritual time. And they were, and the thing is, in the monastery, they were, it seemed to be more spiritual than it was dogmatic there. So I kind of led a very spiritual existence even from a child. And when I was young, I used to, instead of going out and playing football and all that kind of stuff, I used to study constantly. And I suppose that I was more advanced for my years. Where, you know, if we were in a class at school and we would go into religious education, then I would be right there, you know, arguing with the teacher and arguing points that they couldn't really understand, and couldn't understand how the heck I knew it.
Yes.
And how did I understand it? And many times I thought, you know, I don't know how I understood it myself. It was just some higher knowledge that I suppose, wisdom that I was picking up, possibly even channeling, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of a tragedy of childhood, I think, that children who are intellectually oriented, who are smart, who are bright or mature for their age, often are singled out for being different. And
definitely.
Yeah, but you know, Carl Jung says that these wounds really are the things that help us to develop and that we grow from. And then I was surprised to read that this pattern of being picked on continued when you were in the military, and you'd already studied some martial arts, so why were they picking on you in the military?
Well, when I went to the military, when I was part of the a combat medic unit, I went to a unit where I was the only Scottish person that was there. So if you like, it was almost, you know, if people can understand, you know, where there was apartheid in South Africa and there was color racism, if you like. Well, I suppose I suffered a little bit of racism through not being who they were. You know, I was Scottish rather than English or Irish or Welsh or something, you know, and I got picked up for that reason. But also I got picked on by a certain individual who was bullying me, and I gave him as good as I got back. And then, of course, he arranged for all of his friends and stuff to come in and attack me in the middle of the night while I was sleeping. So I was woken up to, you know, 8-masked men.
Wow.
That were standing over me and beating the living daylights out of me.
Oh, that has to have been very traumatic.
It was very traumatic, and I must admit that it's only within the past, say, maybe 5 years or so that I've managed to deal with that and to deal with that trauma. So much so that through that time and through other things that have happened to me in my life, I actually ended up with post-traumatic stress disorder.
So what helped you to work through that trauma finally after so many years?
Understanding the bigger picture of life, meditation, and my wife.
Uh-huh.
My wife has been an amazing support system for me. And she helped me to see the bigger picture, and, you know, she helped me through all that trauma. She accepted me for who I was and not for who someone wanted me to be.
Yes, I really, that comes through in the book, really, how important she is in your life. Now,
she's very important.
Yes. I was surprised to read that you were able to train as a ninja, you know, in Scotland. Somehow I had the impression, created by the films I've seen that we've all seen, you know, the Ninja Turtles, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and these newer Chinese movies and the older Chinese Kung Fu movies. I was under the impression that it was a lost art and that ninjas were primarily assassins. But you paint a different picture. What's the ninja philosophy?
Well, in actual fact, this is what too many people believe. They believe that the ninjas were assassins and they were, you know, and I think that's the picture that we have to say has been painted by Hollywood. When in actual fact, if you study any of the historical facts about the ninja, and you study any historical facts, you know, things that happened in Japan, especially in the Edo period, the ninjas were very, very spiritual people. And in fact, the basis of the whole aspect of combat, or of Budo, I want to say, rather than martial arts, it comes from universal knowledge and comes from intuitive senses and nature. Everything based around ninjutsu, which I want to state now, actually, is not just a martial art, it's a way of life. And I find that a lot of my students that come and train with me, they change their lives so dramatically that it's amazing to see the change in them. So the ninja were very spiritual people. They understood nature. They understood the subtle intricacies of nature and also of universal knowledge and of universal energy. And the combatant side of the ninja was very minuscule indeed. It was very, very small. They were there to protect their families, their country, and the earth as a whole, really, if you like. So the sinister side of them was very small. I mean, there was obviously factions, there was other clans that were involved in intelligence gathering for the emperors. And again, the intelligence gathering side of it, again, just comes back to the way things were at that time. But they weren't sinister. They were known as shadow warriors, David. And the reason that they were known as shadow warriors, people used to give them this whole kind of persona that they were evil and things like that, you know, and from the shadow warriors. And this is how they understood nature. The reason they got the name shadow warriors is because two ninjas would utilize the sun, the sun and the moon and nature, and they would cloak themselves and they would stand on each other's shoulders and stand in front of where the moon was casting its light. So of course what happened then is that the shadow that was cast by these two Japanese people standing on one on top of one other shoulder, it cast a massive shadow of this sinister 12-foot character that frightened the living daylights out of people that weren't so much spiritually advanced. So they were able to use nature and they were able to use psychology more to the benefit than even just an intuition than using combative techniques. The combatant side of it is very small indeed.
That's really fascinating, and it's wonderful to have your book kind of open up that dimension of it. In your book, you talk about your intuition, how your intuition, which you already indicated that you were had a kind of spiritual sensibility from early on, but you also talk about how your intuition or sixth sense, as you refer to it, developed as a result of the ninja training. Say a little bit about that.
Well, I think it's very important when anyone studies martial arts, they tend to study movement. They tend to study, in order for me to do this particular movement, I must place a hand here or a foot there, and this gets me this form. And when you understand the Bujinkan and understand ninjutsu, you understand that it's formless. It comes from almost no mind. You're working in a higher dimension, within a fifth and a sixth dimension. So the movement that you would learn from the beginning is only to teach your subconscious how the body would move and how the body would manipulate and lock up. And when you move past that and beyond that and you start to utilize your intuitive senses and you understand energy, the important thing is to grasp exactly what energy is and how energy affects in the body. You start to work on a higher dimension and you're able to move intuitively almost without even thinking. One of the, I talked to a great man regularly. My instructor is a man called Andrew Beattie, and he's a fantastic, and he's a very spiritual teacher as well. And another man that I talked to is a gentleman in America called Ed Martin, who's very affectionately known as Papasan. And one of the things we talk about is we talk about this higher dimension and this ability to move without thinking. And if I can give you a concept, this one statement really capitalizes on everything, and that is, before you've gone, you're already there. And that one statement will make so many people think, what does he mean? So go away and think about it and come back to me and email me and let me know what you think it means. Because all that is to do with understanding nature, understanding intuition, and how you can actually tune into the vibrations and of other people's thoughts of how nature moves.
Was there a moment of breakthrough for you, or was it more of a gradual process of being able to reach this higher intuitive dimension?
I think a breakthrough is a very hard thing to probably pinpoint. I think for me, it was my natural intuitive psychic and mediumship side has always been there. And it wasn't until later on in life, I'm going to say within the last 5 years in particular, that I managed to blend all of the aspects together. Now, another interesting thing is, when I was talking to Papasan and was on the telephone just recently, I said to him that I had a few years ago, I had a terrible car accident. And that car accident, I had an out-of-body experience, had a near-death experience. But I understood what was going on because I was already a medium anyway. But when I came back from that car accident, I suffered such a bad traumatic head injury that my memory was so badly lost. I couldn't remember anything basic about ninjutsu. I couldn't remember how to move, the names of anything, how to move, the basic kamae. It had all gone from me. But then what I had to do was to go within myself and just find the internal spirit, the spirit of the warrior, if you like, and bring that out and start to move intuitively.
That's fascinating. Can you talk about that near-death experience at all?
Yeah, what happened was, it was very unfortunate. Before my wife and I got married, we were working together, we were doing demonstrations of mediumship, I was teaching martial arts, I was teaching the Way of the Warrior. And what we did is we decided we wanted, there was a person that we knew who was going to make our cake for us. And we decided that it was pretty bad weather in Scotland, the snow was gone, but we didn't have a lot of time, and we went to go and get this cake arranged. But unfortunately, we broke down, we pulled over to the side of the road, and to cut a long story short, we put our hazard lights on, we did everything right, but a man who was traveling in a council lorry behind us, was on the mobile phone and wasn't paying attention. So he crashed into the car at high speed. and crushed the car. Mm. And what happened was is it crushed us as well. Mm. And we were inside the vehicle. But the thing was is that my father passed a good few years ago. And my wife and I were waiting on the recovery truck coming out to get us, to take us to the garage. And we were just sitting in both in the front seats of our car. And I heard the voice from Spirit shout my name, and I recognized it as my father. And it scared me a little bit. And as I turned around and looked, I saw the lorry coming towards us. Actually, not coming towards us. It was coming from behind, but it felt as if it was coming towards us because I was looking in the mirror. And then I moved over to stop my wife going through the windscreen. And then everything just went blank. And I was floating outside the vehicle, and I was watching everything happen in slow motion from outside of the car. My body was out. It had thrown itself from my human form, if you like, and it was my spirit body that was outside of the vehicle, and I witnessed everything, absolutely everything. And then I felt this heavy vibration, and everything was really bright. And then all of a sudden, I came back into my body in the car, and then you know from then on it was just blood and you know things that were running down my face. But I actually never felt anything of the impact because my spirit was taken. I was taken out of my body.
And interesting that you had that warning with your father's voice.
I did, and you know it's amazing because I would not have moved if I hadn't heard that voice really clear. And I'm talking about objectively now, not subjectively in my mind, objectively outside physical hearing in my ear, this voice screaming my name.
Yes, yes. Now, among your many interesting experiences, you were detailed to help protect the Queen of England for a period. What was that like, and what sort of training did they give you for
well,
that?
It wasn't really the Queen of England. I mean, what happened was I was very lucky because the Queen, it was the Queen Mother. It was actually the Queen Elizabeth's mum.
Oh, okay.
And she was coming to our area where we were, and they needed medical backup, but the medical backup that had to be there had also have security experience and training. So we did a lot of training just in the military as we normally do, and then there was three of us that were chosen to work with the detail, to work with the close protection detail when the Queen Mum came to visit. And we worked very closely with the special branch officers and the police officers, and we worked very closely with them for a period of time. It was a very short period of time, but at that time, it was a great time for me, and it was very honourable. You know, we got a mention in our Core magazine, and it gave me the interest in close protection. That's what the catalyst was for me to go into the close protection industry.
Yes, and so after you left the Army, you became a personal bodyguard, doing what you call close protection, protecting wealthy business executives.
Yeah.
What was that like? Did you ever have any incidents or close calls that you can tell us about?
I mean, to be honest, 95% of the time, it was very boring because you would be in a Mercedes, or you're on a private jet, or you'd be on a, you know, traveling to another country, staying in hotels and big fancy houses, and nothing really happens. And then you get a little bit, I suppose, complacent. And when coming back to London with a particular client, he had been a little bit indiscreet with his business dealings, and he was targeted by a criminal organization. So myself and my colleague found ourselves under attack on a couple of occasions in the center of London, in actual fact, and also in France. And I was also very lucky from that time. I came over to Los Angeles and did some training and helped to train some guys out there. And, you know, worked kind of closely with the law enforcement agents out there at the time as well.
Well, did you say you were attacked on a couple of occasions. Were people coming at you with guns or knives or
exactly? My client was attacked with a knife. Just as he was moving outside of his hotel room.
Oh, my goodness. And were you able to make any intervention?
I was, because I didn't feel too good at the time that day anyway. I knew something was wrong, but I couldn't quite pinpoint it. And luckily, I was the first person that was going out of the door to make sure everything was clear. And they just went straight for it. So I was able to kind of use the door and trap the door on the person's hand. But we actually managed to make an arrest that day. And one of my other colleagues removed the client and took the client away. Put him in the back of he was driving a Jaguar at the time, and took him away whilst we waited and the police arrived.
And you've also done undercover work where your sixth sense was of help. There's a story you tell in the book about penetrating an international criminal organization.
Yeah.
Can you share that story with us?
I can't say who it is, because it's very classified, to
sure.
be honest, but I work very closely with certain police agencies in the UK, and I don't want to say that I was very lucky. I'd rather say that I was very unlucky to have come across what I actually came across, which then meant that I had to go undercover into an organization that was involved in not only criminal activities, but terrorist activities. So I had to get involved there. So I was, some people might think that it's, you know, it's a good thing and it's very exciting, but no, it wasn't. And it was very dangerous and I was very unlucky to get involved in it. A few occasions, it could have went all wrong for me if it hadn't been for my intuition.
Yes, in the book you tell stories about how actually your intuition pulled you through.
Yeah. Well, there was a couple of times that I was involved. There was an organization that was operating from outside Turkey, and they were involved in bringing in large amounts of heroin. And one of the operations we were on was gaining intelligence from the people we were dealing with. But unfortunately, it kind of didn't go too well, and I was supposed to go to a meeting with a target to gain some further information. But his colleagues had obviously set up to take me out and shoot me.
And you got sort of intuitively, you were led to not go to that meetup, right?
Yes, I nothing was going right that day. Just nothing at all was going right. I felt quite ill. I didn't feel right. I kept on having images in my mind. I was quite fearful of what could possibly happen, to the extent that it was really playing on me somewhat too much that I started to realize that there must be something more in this. And I took a little bit of time out just to you know, kind of meditate and just take 5 minutes to myself. And I, you know, it didn't go away, and the images were getting stronger, and I decided to call it off. I was very lucky then, because the intelligence that came back to me was that's exactly what was going to happen.
And that's really one of the main messages of your book, is you're encouraging readers to pay more attention to those intuitive feelings that come up that often we would tend to dismiss of not feeling well or feeling uneasy about some situation that they're about to go into.
I mean, some of the stories that I talk about sound very grand, you know, from working undercover, from doing bodyguarding.
Yes.
But I want to take it right down to nitty-gritty from on the street, for people on the street. You know, I worked after I was previously married before I met Joanne. And that marriage ended, and I went to live in Aberdeenshire, and I worked as a, I had nothing else to do, so I actually, in order to test out my taijutsu, if you like, or my unarmed combat, I started working as a nightclub doorman, which did actually put it to the test very realistically on many occasions against various different weapons. But I used to get intuitive flashes even before I went to work, and intuitive flashes when I was at work. And I was able to really, I was able to tune into a lot more. I was able to identify who was carrying what, if somebody was carrying a knife. I was able to identify, you know, when trouble was going to happen, who, you know, I was able to stop things happening before they actually happened. And I think a lot of very good security personnel do this, but they don't understand how they're doing it. And really all they're using is their intuitive, the intuitive feelings. And even to a simple situation of my wife and I going to a meeting with someone and having an intuitive flash that something was wrong, and nearly actually taking evasive action and not going where we should have went, which actually stopped a massive car accident again.
Mm-hmm.
Because we listened to our intuition.
Yes.
And I think so many people miss out these little intuitive signs. They miss out this feeling, this gut instinct. Everybody's got it. You don't have to be an amazing psychic or a medium to be able to do this. And I teach people, you know, that you can use your natural... I mean, a cop, let's take a New York cop or a Los Angeles cop, they go on hunches all the time. And they use the word, they use this term hunch, which actually is an intuitive flash.
Yes.
So, and we all do it. So if we're able to become more in tune with our mind, body, and spirit, then perhaps we're able to identify many other things that happen in life and make this world a safer place. You know, reduce terrorism or, you know, reduce the risks of terrorism. There was many people before 9/11 that had flashes of 9/11. And there was people that saved their own lives because they had intuitive flashes. Now, a lot of people and a lot of skeptics will come on and say to me, yeah, so if someone already picked up that there was going to be a bomb in the Twin Towers, how come they couldn't phone up and tell the CIA or tell the FBI or tell anybody like that? Well, it's not the type of thing that you do, and we've got to face facts that some things are written in stone. Some things happen for various reasons, whether it's for life lessons or whether it's to make us sit up and take note. And some things we cannot stop, even though we might pick up the information. But what we can do is we can reduce the risks of it. We can perhaps change the outcome or save many more lives than we originally thought we could.
Yes. Now, the bulk of your book is devoted to tips to help readers increase their safety in all aspects of their lives. And you cover everything from ways to protect your home to dealing with kidnapping, letter bombs, terrorist attacks, verbal and physical abuse, rape, and more. So, in general, what's your overall approach? I guess maybe it's rooted in what you were just talking about.
Yeah, it is. I mean, what I wanted to do is that I wanted to give people a handbook for life and something that shows individuals that they are spirits in human form and not human in spirit form, that they have a unique ability to be able to manifest their own destiny, to be able to remain safe. This world, we've got to face it. I don't care what anybody says out there. I know there's a lot of airy-fairy people out there that think that the world's a lovely place and there's no evil in it. Now, this world is full of evil. This world is a very hostile place. But the good Lord gave us a gift. He gave us the gift of intuition. He gave us psychic abilities that I've spoken about all the way through the Bible. From the time of Jesus to the time of all prophets and all religions, we all have intuitive abilities. So why can't we use these intuitive abilities to make ourselves safer in this hostile world, to make ourselves more aware of what's going on, and to perhaps save a life, whether it's a child's life, an adult's life, or even an animal's life? We can use this for so much more than just being able to tell the future.
Yes. Well, speaking of telling the future, I understand that you now offer yourself out as a psychic medium, which seems like a strange thing for a martial artist, bodyguard, security consultant kind of guy. How did that evolve?
Well, you know, it's at the end of the day, we have a gift. And one of the important thing is that you use it to help people. Whether I look at the ninjutsu training and everything that I do, it helps people change their life. It helps people to understand their intuition. It helps people to remain safe. But also it helps people to tune into the environment, to tune into vibrational energy that surrounds us. Now, that's only one step up to talking to spirit. And if we look at the history of ninjutsu, there was a great deal of discussing with spirit and communicating with spirit and being able to get information from the gods, if you like, or from Buddha. Now, that's a form of mediumship. So it's not really that different. And at the end of the day, I have a gift that's able to help people. And one of the things I want to state is that my wife and I, we don't do readings for people that want it for entertainment purposes. People come to us for a various different reasons. I recently had a woman that came to me because her son, who used to be in the forces, was lost due to a horrific accident. So I'm able to use my gift. I'm able to prove that life continues. I'm able to prove that death is not the end, that we do carry on, and give evidence that that the spirit lives on, that people are safe and are not suffering. And I perhaps give people that little bit more comfort that allows them to go through the healing and the grieving process a little bit more a little bit more comfortably than other people will. And also using my psychic abilities, we've worked with law enforcement on missing person cases, on murder cases, and that's to help people. So we don't really do it just for an entertainment purposes and for people that are just interested. People that come to me for readings are coming because they want help, they want closure, they want to know that their loved ones are still around them, and they want evidence of that. And I'm a very scientific person. And in fact, I'm so scientific that I'm involved with the University of California with a certain scientist that investigating this type of stuff, this phenomena, because I don't want to mislead anyone. And I would rather say to someone that was coming and sitting in front of me, if I couldn't get anything, say, I'm sorry, I'm not able to help you today, but perhaps maybe another day or someone else will be able to help you. And at the end of the day, when people come to me, they're not coming to me through advertisements or anything else. Spirit bring the people to you that need the help if you're of the right mind and frame of mind for it. I know there's a lot of charlatans out there, and I know there's a lot of psychics and mediums out there that are just interested in money and just interested in fame. But at the end of the day, when someone comes and they're devastated from losing a loved one, and you're able, and I must make this clear, it is not me that does it. I am just like a telephone that someone is able to talk to or able to communicate through. I'm an empty vessel. I'm a telephone or a radio. And all I do is I relay messages of what I hear, feel, and see that gives the person comfort.
Okay. Did this sort of direction in your life open up as a result of meeting your wife?
No, I'd always been like that. Even when I was in the monastery as a young kid, I used to see spirits of monks and priests that had gone on. And there was a few instances in my life as a young child that I had these experiences, as well as some experiences in the army. And before I even met my wife, I was doing readings and stuff like that. But I didn't quite understand it. And what it does is it needs someone to put you on the right path and say, this is what this is, and this is what this means, and this square goes into this square hole, and this round thing goes into this round hole. And she gave me the understanding of the gifts that I had and how to use them.
That's great. How did the two of you meet?
Well, that was fascinating, because I was working as a medium and a psychic, and I was doing readings for people. But after my father passed, a lot of things happened to me that I couldn't explain. And I was looking for more direction, and I was looking for further training to develop stronger. And I was a member of actually a spiritualist church, but I found that they were very ego-orientated and very egotistical. So I was working with crystals actually at the time, and I was collecting crystals, and I had a friend of mine that wanted a particular crystal. And I went into the shop, and I saw this card for this woman who was a psychic medium who was doing training courses every now and again. And I picked it up, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll contact her. And just one day out of the blue, I decided to give her a call, and then we talked for ages on the phone. I went and met her, and then she was running a development course, which I went on, and I went on as a medium. And she told me beforehand, she warned me, don't be giving any messages out when you're sitting in this course, which I totally ignored. I didn't have to mean to ignore it,
yeah,
because I didn't have any control over it. I didn't know. It was so natural to me that I didn't know what was the difference between psychic work and mediumship. So while I was on the course, I gave this message, and she was a bit annoyed with me and gave me a rave, and we fell in love and we got married a year later.
Oh, that's a good story. Well, is there anything else you'd like to say that you haven't had a chance to get in here?
No, I mean, just anyone who reads the book will find that it's a book that they can go to time and time again. I get emails from many people, and even young teenagers, 15-year-old kids in America, that get in touch with me and say, your book has changed my life. It's made me less angry. It's made me understand things a bit better. And I've had women who have got in touch with me saying, I now understand the cycle of abuse that I've been in, and I'm able to look at life a bit, you know, stronger. The book is there to help people and to change lives. What it is, it's a key that allows you to go up to the door and unlock the door and to change your life the way you want to change it. And I would say, you know, to anyone, you know, to go out and give it a try and have a look at it yourself. And you've read it yourself. I mean, you know how it is.
Sure, sure. Well, if I get back to Scotland, I will see maybe if I can get to meet you. I'd love to do that. So,
well, we're coming out to America because the book is turning into a TV documentary.
Oh, excellent.
Went Productions in Los Angeles have taken the book on, and they're going to turn it into a documentary. And my second book is done at the moment, and is in the process. It should be published in America as well. And actually, my wife and I are looking at, we're trying to move over there, to live over there.
Oh, really? Do you know where you want to settle?
Well, I've got so many favorite places in the state. I love Arizona.
Yes.
I love certain areas of California, but I really love Arizona. I'm not into the big, Florida, where all the Brits and the holidaymakers go. I love Long Island and New York. I love Virginia. But my real love is I really like Arizona.
Well, you sound like you're an American already. Hey, Jack Brown.
I love it. I am American. I mean, the book was written for the American market, so yeah, I do love it.
Jack Brocas, thanks so much for being my guest on Shrink Wrap Radio.
It's been a pleasure, David.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Scottish ninja and psychic Jack Brocas. What a wild and interesting life he's had. Personally, I thought the ninjas were relegated entirely to medieval Japan and to folklore. So, and the movies and TV. And so it was fascinating to hear Jock's story. I'm always a bit envious of my guests who went on to get black belts in various martial arts. I had my own aspirations. But hey, you can only do so many things. And I've done a lot of them, if I do say so myself. I was especially interested in the way his spiritual nature as a boy was further opened up in the process of his martial arts training. And it strikes me as really extraordinary that this former soldier, bouncer, bodyguard, and terrorism expert would end up practicing as a psychic medium. His book is fascinating, not only for the way his personal story unfolds, but also for the wealth of information it contains about protecting your person, your home, and your family. His approach is one that combines both the practical precautions with a call to trust the inner warnings of your own sixth sense.
You want to learn about the inside and what makes us tick? You could find all the answers you need real quick. Get on the couch with Dr. Dave. Leave your worries behind. It'll all be fine. It's Shrink Wrap Radio. It's all in your mind.
for insight into personal growth and the inner life, hear Shrink Wrap Radio with Dr. Dave.
I'm happy to say that our logo is still featured right in the center of the higher education page on iTunes, and you can help us stay there by staying subscribed or getting subscribed if you're not already subscribed. And so if you're listening but haven't subscribed, please do so. You'll find a link on our website that will help you subscribe in iTunes, or you can also subscribe at mevio.com/shrinkwrapradio. Also, if you'll submit positive reviews on iTunes, that gives us a big boost as well. And let me call your attention once again to the top spots ad widget on our site, where you can support us. If you have a blog or website that you'd like to advertise, there are two empty spots there. You can do so for a PayPal donation of only $20, which really helps to support the show. For example, I want to thank once again Ken Valerio for his support by purchasing a place on our Top Spots ad widget. And if you click on the link there, Ken's an artist, and you can see his artwork up there in Toronto. It'll take you to his online gallery. So this is a wonderful way that you can support Shrink Wrap Radio. For example, it helped support me traveling to Las Vegas about a week ago for the recent New Media Expo, where all the top podcasters gathered. You might recall that last year I interviewed a bunch of podcasters there. I decided against doing that this time. There was a lot of emphasis there on monetization of podcasts, enough to set my head spinning. Now, I didn't begin Shrink Wrap Radio with the idea of making money, but the money-minded folks keep emphasizing to me that I'm giving away a lot of potentially valuable content, and they're urging me to make some of it available only by subscription through a premium version. I don't want to alienate you, my audience. I'm wondering how you would react if some of the shows were available only by subscribing to a premium feed for some reasonable cost that would have extra podcasts and perhaps offer compilations around such topics as dreams or hypnosis or psychotherapy or other topics. Or perhaps all the archives should be available only on the premium site, or maybe the transcripts as well. Please feel free to write me with your reactions or suggestions in this regard. And also, I've put up a poll on the site that you'll find if you scroll down the right side of the page at shrinkwrapradio.com, where I pose this question and you can vote yes or no. So I hope you'll go there. Now, be sure to check out my new interview with New York City psychoanalyst Dr. Fern Cohen. You might recall that she was my guest on two earlier Shrink Wrap Radio episodes, and I wanted to get her into the Wise Counsel series as well. So I did. And the question we explore there is psychoanalysis dead? I think you'll find it to be an interesting interview, and you'll find that interview on my other podcast series at www.wisecounselpodcast.com. By the way, if you're into such things, you can follow my Twitters at twitter.com/shrinkwrapradio. And I've put a link to that on the site as well. I'm trying to work on Twittering a bit more often, especially as more of you begin to follow me there. Now, our sponsors are Mevio and GoDaddy, where you can use our discount code of SHRINK3 at checkout to save 10% on your next domain name purchase.
You're listening to Shrink Wrap Radio with your host, Dr. Dave. It's all in your mind.
Hey, thanks to Eric Patton for that very nice transition. Eric is a new listener, and he writes that he has a CD of acoustic guitar on iTunes titled Guitar Only. You can download individual tracks for 99 cents or buy them all for $9.99. Check it out on iTunes. I may be playing more of Eric's music with his permission in coming shows. And I think next show I will announce a transition contest where I'll send a book to the person who submits the transition I like best. I won't go into that now because I don't want to overburden this episode with a lot more talk. But I do want to get in some listener emails. And speaking of music, our first one is from longtime listener and producer of our theme music that we've been using, Near, in New York City, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. The podcast about irritable male syndrome was so amazing. I was touched and could identify with everything that was said. Your program is simply the best. Thank you so much, Near." And I think that interview touched a number of people, and as a matter of fact, I recommend that listeners go to the site and look at the comments. There was a particularly moving one there in the comments to that show, and a response from Dr. Jed Diamond, who was the subject of that interview. Next, we hear from Mark, who writes, "Dr. Dave, just listen to the excellent live show today. Great stuff. Mr. Trumbull has some really great stories. You mentioned needing a name for the live podcast. Here are some silly ones I thought of. Anima and Animus. The Gestalt Get Together. The sum is greater than the pair." That one's kind of funny. And Synergy Sessions. Correlation Coefficients. A statistic that indicates the degree of relationship between two variables, he says in parentheses. "That's all I could think of for now. Take it easy, Mark." You know, I'd even forgotten about putting that up until just rereading it right now. And yes, I think I'm still searching for some substitute name for the shows that Jerry Trumbull and I do together. I don't think any of those quite make it for me, Mark, but we'll keep trying. And Ken Valerio, who I mentioned earlier, sent in the following response to that same show that I did with Jerry, where it's the one that was called Chumps for Chimps, in which we talk about some of the issues relating to animal rights. And some of the stories that Jerry shared from his own past were, you know, pretty heavy. And so I could see people reacting one way or the other. And so here's what Ken wrote. He says, "Hey, Dr. Dave, I hope you are well. I recently listened to your latest live show on animals, and I was very disturbed by it. The content was very difficult to listen to, particularly because Jerry is a very vivid storyteller. Anyway, I was expecting a light and witty conversation, and it got very hard to listen to, and I was thinking it would have been nice to have a little warning. I thought you might record a little warning at the beginning of that show. These are things that people sometimes assume can't be happening, and to hear someone recount their actual experience is horrifying. Without preparation, it can feel a little damaging. I found it hard to shake afterwards. As an aside, I find it strange that someone could argue for the value of such experiments for military purposes and be so passionate about zoos. Anyway, I hope you don't mind the suggestion. It is, of course, appropriate material for your show, but difficult nonetheless. Your loyal fan, Ken Valerio." And Ken, I appreciate your candid feedback. I definitely can understand where you're coming from. I think there might have been a little bit of misunderstanding on your part, though. I don't think that Jerry was arguing for those experiments for military purposes. He may have been quoting somebody else at the time in terms of the message that he was being given as a, you know, as a young researcher about why he should be doing that. Jerry, in fact, has considerable regret about that period of his life and some of the things that he did in the name of science. And if you listen closely, I think some listeners may have noticed that he was actually a bit choked up at certain points when he was reciting that story. I also heard from Natasha Mitchell, host of the wonderful All in the Mind series, in response to an invitation. I keep hounding her to appear on Shrink Wrap Radio, and she wrote to say, "I'm so sorry about the delay, David. It's one of those times, just an epic house move, and National Science Week is upon me. I'm so sorry, but we'll get there, Natasha Mitchell." Well, that would be a real coup to have Natasha on this show. So I think we'll wrap it up with that for today. Please send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio. And of course, I love it when you leave voicemails on Skype, where I'm ShrinkPod, or if you leave them on using MyChingo or on my phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks again to Jock Brokus for sharing his life story and insights on ninjutsu. My next guests will be Drs. Arnold and Amy Mindell talking about world work. I had a delightful time interviewing them, and I hope you'll enjoy us for that show. So this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.